are Locked On Pistons, your daily Detroit Pistons podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What is happening? And welcome to the Locked On Pistons podcast, your episode for Tuesday, March the 5th. And where's the district in District Detroit? This is your boy, Matt Shook, a sports writer here in the Motor City, covering the NBA for the Associated Press and the Detroit News, a Pistons fan and follower my whole life and a sports newspaper reporter for over a decade as well. Today we're going to be talking pretty much all about District Detroit. Bill Shea of Crain's Detroit, the business publication, is coming on to talk to me about the construction of Little Caesars Arena, what was promised, what could maybe be coming down the pike for the area, what happened and what impact the Pistons and Red Wings possibly winning someday down the road could make in the area between Midtown and Downtown, which is actually the area where I live. I live in District Detroit, which is interesting. But give me a follow, by the way, on Twitter at Matt underscore Shook, S-C-H-O-C-H. Another underscore after that, also the Locked On Pistons Twitter account at Locked On Pistons. And also check us out on Facebook at Locked On Pistons dash Matt Shook. Appreciate you guys doing that. But first, we're going to pull a little bit of a Jedi mind trick and complain about Mike Valeni on 97.1 The Ticket, spending most of his first hour of his show on Monday talking about the failings of District Detroit after Sunday night, one of the biggest victories of the season for the Pistons, just because it seems like he personally thinks that it should be a rebuild situation for the Pistons. It's as predictable as the sun going down, and I actually basically predicted it on Monday's show that something like that would happen. So the whole show turned into failings of District Detroit and then NFL Combine talk in, you know, after one of these big victories for the Pistons. Now, and this is something that deserves to be talked about. We're going to talk about it on this show. It's obviously a black eye for the Ilitch group right now. And the Pistons kind of fall under that category as one of the main tenants of Little Caesars Arena as well. So obviously this is a negative story for the Pistons, and we're going to talk about it here. But the Jedi mind trick about this is that I'm going to complain about Mike Valeni talking about it so much, skipping over the overtime win against the Raptors, the two victories, the sixth spot in the Eastern Conference. And then I'm going to go ahead and do it all myself and talk about District Detroit all day here with Bill Shea of Crain's Detroit. But it wasn't the whole show, because like I said, I heard Valeni, when I heard that part of the show on Monday, I heard him tease that later on he had all sorts of content planned about the NFL Combine. So not just crapping on the Pistons the day after what I called their third biggest win of the season, the win that propelled them to a 93% chance of making the playoffs, according to 538.com. After all we do in this city is bitch about how it's been over 1,000 days since the last playoff victory. Well, you know, dollars to donuts says it's probably going to be some sort of win for the Pistons this year. And I know that winning a first-round game isn't the ultimate, you know, design of an organization or the ultimate goal, but certainly we've seen Pistons teams in the past build on this. I think that we saw in 2016 that the Pistons got to the playoffs, had somewhat of a positive result in the grand scheme of things by taking the NBA champs that year to four tough games, or I think three tough games and one blowout. Obviously, the team kind of broke down and fractured after that. Those young players didn't grow into what Pistons fans hoped and maybe expected that they might grow into over the years. But, you know, instead of all that kind of stuff, I'm glad that on 97.1 they got some great talk about how big Kyler Murray's hands are, or how fast the guy who got kicked out of Michigan State ran in his 40, or maybe the overall athletic ability of some wide receiver from Mississippi State that I hadn't heard of until a couple weeks ago. But yeah, nice that we can talk about how guys run around in spandex are tested in their measurable drills. Glad we could squeeze that in for like 2:30 of the highest rated Detroit sports show pretty much of all time, as far as I know, which it probably is. And again, this is a compliment to the Valeni show and how ubiquitous it is, how big of a deal it is to setting the agenda for Detroit sports fans. You know, they put up those Twitter polls of all their listeners about should the Pistons make the playoffs or not. And more times than not, those all end up being lemmings and being people that just certainly agree with everything that Mike Valeni says. And so you go along with it. And it's got most of the city thinking that way. And again, there is some validity to that opinion, but certainly there's some nuance in that discussion about this side or the other. Certainly we'd all want to add Zion Williamson if it was feasible this offseason, if we could. Again, I haven't read about Detroit radio ratings in many years, but when it was a two-station town, I know that Mike Valeni and Terry Foster were ratings monsters. They dominated the market. Mike is as talented as they come on the radio. I know that he's probably wiping the floor with some of the FM stations and whatever else. I know I'm not as familiar, again, with the ins and outs of Detroit radio as I once was when I worked at WDFN. But I'll say this. I get into conversations with my friends who I haven't seen in a while about just moving back into town here a couple months ago. I write big stories for the news covering all of our professional teams and some of the college major teams as well. I'm doing a daily podcast about the Pistons that has gotten, you know, pretty popular actually in our own small way. Starting up some other fun projects that I hope to tell you guys about soonish as well. But maybe the second or third question that comes up in these conversations is, well, you know, what do you think about Valeni? You know, they've got a take on him. And I understand it. He's a compelling character. And like I said, it's a character, basically. It's a pro wrestling heel most times, and it's compelling radio. You love it or you hate it. You react to it either way, and it's a great thing to listen to while you're pissed off about the traffic or the potholes or the thing that's the job that sucks that you're listening to get through it. I used to listen to, that was kind of my birth into sports radio, was working at the warehouse at my dad's auto part wholesaler down in Ferndale, where you're just working warehouses, you're stocking shelves, you're checking orders, you're doing all this other stuff that's boring and mind numbing. And the thing that made the time go faster was listening to Stoney and Wojo, or listening to Jamie and Brady, or even Henson and Jamie before that, or Belegian in the midday. So I get it. And I know what these sports radio listeners do. I'm one of them when I'm in the car a lot of times as well. There's no room for nuance on sports radio. They got to have their PPMs. They got to have their quarterly ratings pretty high. And a corporation that's breathing down their neck, a station manager doing the same thing to keep those numbers up with. There's no room for anything on those shows that isn't Lions or the college, the dumb college football rivalry we have in the state that turns all the grown men into children talking about it. But any talk about the other teams, it's got to be a takedown. It's got to be a beatdown. It's got to be compelling radio in that black or white kind of way. It, you know, in their opinion, it's smarter to be the ninth team that decides to tank in a season at the trade deadline to move up maybe three draft slots and get that 7 or 8% chance of Zion Williamson, who himself has a 25% chance of a major injury in his first couple years, or never developing a jump shot, or playing great and then looking around after 4 years like Anthony Davis and saying, you know what, see ya, I'm leaving you with nothing, and now Detroit's a wasteland for a decade. So, yeah, that's obviously a better idea to do that for that 7 or 8% chance of that happening. Luckily, on the Locked On Pistons podcast, we have a little bit of room, a little bit of airways here for a smarter discussion, and that's why I call some of my smart friends like Bill Shea from Cranes Detroit and talk about what's going on down here, and I want to talk about him, about his project from over the weekend in Cranes Detroit. So up next, we're going to talk to Bill about District Detroit, and what it is, what it isn't, and what it could be going forward. But when you're getting your car, instead of turning on that sports radio station in town that we all love, go ahead and tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On Pistons. They'll get you the newest episode. And maybe you'll have a little bit more pleasant of a ride to work. And despite the fact of the snow falling and the potholes and the traffic, I get it. It sucks this time of year, and sometimes letting off some steam, or letting our buddy Mike let off some steam for us, is an easier thing and a funner thing at times. We also have an important favor to ask you. We would like your help. We've put together a survey so we can learn more about listeners like you and make your favorite lockdown podcast even better. This is your opportunity to tell us what you like and tell us what you don't like. It should take about 15 minutes to complete, and by participating, you enter the chance to win a $250 Vivid Seats gift card. Just visit lockdownpodcast.com/survey to participate. Again, that's lockedonpodcast.com/survey, and we appreciate your feedback.
Yes, sir!
All right, and now we're being joined by my friend Bill Shea of Cranes Detroit. He can be found on Twitter at Bill_Shea19. And Bill, thanks for taking the time to join us today.
Hey, always a pleasure.
So, Bill, we want to talk about your story from, it came out online on Sunday, cranesdetroit.com, called "Is the District Detroit Delivering with Little Caesars Arena as the Anchor for This New Neighborhood?" Then you wrote the story, by the way, combined with Kirk Pinho, your coworker there at Cranes Detroit. 2014, I believe, was when some of these plans were formulated. The plan was for 50 blocks connecting Midtown to the north and downtown to the south with District Detroit, a commercial, residential, hotels, apartments, restaurants. Now, 5 years later, what has happened? What did you guys kind of find from your investigation that you guys did?
It wasn't real complex to start off with. If you saw what was unveiled in 2014, there were all these renderings and you know, this imagery and explanations of this really cool stuff that was being pitched to the public. These five different neighborhoods anchored by little, what became known as Little Caesars Arena. 5 years later, if you just look around, it doesn't look like those pictures. So, you know, months ago, we started putting together sort of the breadcrumbs to try and figure out what happened. You know, there can be many different reasons why something doesn't happen, especially in Detroit. And we talked to, you know, various sources, people connected, people familiar with things. We looked at various public records to see what was happening. And our story was especially centered around about 18 months ago, there was a kickoff event for, okay, now we're going to build hundreds and hundreds of apartments, different kinds of apartments around the arena district. And that hasn't happened. There's not even been a shovel in the ground. Some of the people have dropped out of it, just sort of has all come apart and everything's sort of stagnant. So, and there was some maneuverings behind the scenes with some refinancing on the public end of the construction debt. And we wanted to see how that was affected by the lack of what happened. But really it came down to, you know, we were pushing 5 years and decided, hey, you know, they told the public they were going to build this cool stuff. They're going to build it all at once. We have, you know, there's a video of Chris Illich that we took in 2014 saying what a great idea it would be to we're going to do it all at once, and that'll benefit them and us and the city and everybody. And it hasn't happened. So we decided to ask questions and see what we could put together.
Now, I know that it might be hard for some of the folks even involved to answer this now, but what, by the way, what was the final amount of public financing that went into Little Caesars Arena? Was it, we're kind of biting our tongue, we don't like the fact that we're helping out the Illiches build this arena, but at least we're going to get this stuff? Was that kind of how it was characterized back at that time?
In the process really began in 2011-2012 when the Olympia folks went to the state and their finance people got the then Governor Rick Snyder to sort of champion and his various staff folks and legislative folks to champion this idea of the state issuing what would be $450 million in bonds for construction of an arena. And that had to get legislative approval and all these various regulatory approvals and all that, which they got. There was some, you know, Detroit level approvals, but there was never a public vote on anything because of the way they structured this deal. They used a tax capture that was already in place in Detroit. The Downtown Development Authority has, I think, 700 or 800 acres downtown where they capture certain percentages of the property taxes paid by whoever owns buildings or homes or whatever. That money is used for, under state law, for economic development within that zone. And they got approval to expand that zone for the arena area and to be able to use those property tax dollars to pay down some portion of the debt. And the Illiches said, hey, you know, we will pay off $200 million ourselves of that $450 million, which they did. That money is off the public books. But there was never, at the end of the day, a public vote. But the Illiches took a page from every other sports team owner's playbook and said, hey, we're not going to ask for tax money just to build an arena. We're going to build this elaborate, not even a ballpark village, but this huge elaborate district. So that kind of softens the blow, so to speak. And especially in a place like Detroit, where there was this big gap between Midtown and downtown. Part of the reason there was a gap is because the Illiches and others had owned these acres of land that sat fallow or derelict or were just gravel lots, knowing that one day they intended to build something with them. So here's this plan to fill it in. And everybody's like, oh, this is great. There's jobs and the city's bankrupt and this will be a new cool thing. And, you know, there's a small chorus of critics saying, hey, all this academic study says sports subsidies are bad for this sort of thing because there's no return on investment for the public, especially in this case, because there's, you know, like in Joe Louis Arena, the city got a piece of the tickets and the suite sales and concessions and stuff like that. It got millions of dollars out of the use of that building that it owned. The public owns Little Caesars Arena, but it doesn't get a penny out of anything that happens there. So, and then the public never had a vote on it either. It was, they used the systems that were already in place to get it financed and promised this big elaborate district, and most everybody got on board with that.
Yeah, and what could benefit the public was if some of these nearly 700 apartments that they promised back in that event that you were talking about would get built. But yeah, we know plenty of people, a growth of downtown population, or maybe even a growth of midtown population over the past many years, but really hasn't happened in District Detroit because there's no places to live in District Detroit. But we're talking here with Bill Shea of Cranes Detroit. We had you on last year on the podcast, Bill. Empty seats in general at Little Caesars Arena. Do you feel like that this is kind of just a similar miscalculation that was made when we talk about Olympia and Illich Holdings, and then even Tom Gores to an extent too, as one of the tenants of Little Caesars Arena as well with the Pistons, that this is kind of a similar miscalculation about the demand for maybe forcing something into an area that, like we said, is in between two kind of growing areas, but not really a growing area in and of itself yet?
I don't know that it's a miscalculation. I would like to think they're all playing the long game. You know, downtown, you know, the core business district downtown has been on the upswing. There's a lot of investment that has gone on post-recession, post-bankruptcy. And there is demand for housing. People want to live in downtown Detroit. You know, there's a lack of, you know, the kind of housing people want. So it made all sorts of business sense. Okay, they're going to build 500 or 1,000 apartments or condos, townhomes, whatever. Hell yeah, that makes sense. Be the landlord and you get the rent money and you quickly pay off your construction costs and you're raking in cash, or you build it and flip it like the Atlanta Braves just did with their housing. They built next to their new stadium. They built 500 apartments and just flipped them last year for a big profit. So I think that made sense. I think the Pistons coming downtown made sense because in the long term, they'll be good again at some point. When they were good at the Palace led the NBA in attendance. When the Pistons are rocking it at Little Caesars Arena and they're a contender for an NBA title, it will be, you won't see the red or the black seats because it'll be completely filled with fans. They will come if you have a winner. And Agoras knows that. I mean, it's part of the long game for him. You know, I'm not qualified to say if they're on the right path or not to getting it done. I assume winning and losing is cyclical. At some point, they will be, you know, a strong contender again. The Red Wings still get some big crowds. There's a lot of goodwill built up around that team because of the Illich ownership. It was very successful under Mike and Marion, you know, the four Stanley Cup champions. I'm not really sure that, you know, attendance and winning and losing, like I said, is cyclical. If there was more to the district and these were winning teams, if the district right now looked like what was promised in 2014 and both of these teams are pretty good, it would be, I think, crazy down there. I think it really would be a bustling, thriving district. And a lot of these business folks would be making a lot more money. And it's hard to time a new sports venue to, you know, a winning, losing cycle. When I was growing up, the Cleveland Indians got Jacobs Field right as they were sliding into that, you know, World Series mode after being a doormat for 40 years. That was perfect timing for them, but that's hard to, as you know, that's hard to replicate. Stadium construction projects take, you know, 2, 3, 4 years to get done, and you'd like to be a winner when it happens, but that doesn't always happen. But you're there for the long haul. I mean, hopefully they'll be playing in this stadium for 50 years, and, you know, you and I will be long retired in South Florida by the time they get around to talking about a replacement for Little Caesars.
I don't know about you. I'm still going to be doing Lockdown Pistons from Key West, though. So we'll still be doing a little bit of a side job.
I'll be happy to call in from down the street in Key West. But yeah, the winning and losing is for the larger overall district thing. Winning helps, but it's a long game.
In your story on Sunday, you had a statement from Olympia, kind of a boilerplate, you know, corporate statement saying still a vision for what's going to happen down there. We look forward to sharing news of projects at an appropriate time as well. And I'm sure you've had, you know, conversations off the record with a lot of these players and all facets of it down there. Do you get a sense that you believe that there are things coming, whether that be in a near term, medium term, or long term? Do you sense that this kind of could or will take care of itself over the course of a few years or maybe even many years down the road?
I believe things and statements when I see the evidence with my own eyes. You know, we know for a fact, you know, they were had partnerships. They were working with developers to try and get deals done. A lot of the reporting that we did on, in this package of stories kind of lays out how they the what we've been told is their business management style of wanting to not really put much skin in the game, demanding more, you know, the third parties put more money up. And, you know, we're told that there's a shocking level of micromanagement from high Olympia executives worried about, you know, the color of the tile in the bathroom. You know, it makes it very hard to get this stuff done. I absolutely believe they have intended to do it and want to do it, because you know, you don't need a MBA from Wharton to understand, like, if you build this stuff and there's a demand, you're going to make money from it. It's, you know, basic capitalism. So I think they want to do it, but the execution is where the issues have arisen over the last several years. They say there's stuff's going to happen. Okay. They've issued a lot of press releases, had a lot of renderings over the years. Some stuff has gotten done. I mean, Little Caesars Arena is a very, you know, one of the world's busiest arenas, and people seem to like it. But there's stuff right outside Little Caesars Arena that's half built and just sitting and unfinished, literally on the arena site itself, that's not done. So, like I said before, when it's finished, I'll believe it then. Until then, I'm paid to be skeptical.
Yeah, and my own personal touch on it is that I go to a lot of these games and I walk outside, and even the bars and restaurants that are part of Little Caesars Arena, you know, Kid Rock and all that stuff there, the social club, that an hour after the game, those are already empty, even on some of these weekend nights. So it's not really the bustling district of people hanging out, even that weren't going to games and stuff like that, that maybe we believed. And I was a guy who saw a lot of these renderings on the Fruit Press and News and Crane's websites when they came out. And there were, I can recall seeing a video and sitting, I think, in the Virgin Islands at the time when I was seeing this and being like, wow, this is a pretty cool live. And now I'm here living in District Detroit. Actually, I'm doing this interview from the southern tip of District Detroit on Grand Circus Park, where I live. And it's not there. You guys had the great picture in your Crane's article of just the parking lots as you look south there. So certainly hasn't been the delivery that they promised 5 years ago, like you said, and like you guys had in your great report in the article. Now, Bill, since it came out, are you, and I know it's tough to sense this, there's readership numbers from the story, there's, you know, certain comment sections or emails you get or sources that are calling you. Do you sense, is this getting a lot of reaction from readers and from you know, the players involved? Is this a story that's getting a lot of outrage from citizens? What kind of reaction has this story gotten in the day and a half since it came out?
It's gotten a tidal wave of reaction. On Twitter alone, it's, you know, hundreds of people react, you know, commenting and having their say. I know on 97.1, Mike Valenti spent an hour and a half taking calls on this topic with people raging about it. You know, I think what our coverage did was the tipping point of, you know, there's been some really good stories here and there noting, like, hey, this stuff's not done. We did this big comprehensive story. You know, we got the receipts on stuff and some, you know, these really cool photos that show this real stark, like, here's what was promised, here's what it looks like today. And it's like you pointed out, it's a ugly parking lot in December or in the winter. And people realize that, and people know there were tax dollars involved, and people are angry. People have questions. And, you know, people who are big fans of what the Illiches have done, who like their teams and eat their pizza, like, you know, some of them feel kind of betrayed, judging by everything I'm hearing and reading. They want this to get done. This was sold as, like, hey, this is going to be a cool thing for Detroit, not just for the civic pride of the, you know, hey, you're a Wings fan, a Tigers fan, a Pistons fan, but, you know, you live and work in Detroit, whether you're a sports fan or not, whether you go to concerts or not, this is, you know, if this was done, this would be a good thing for the city, and at least in concept. And people are like, hey, you said you would do this. You haven't done it. What's up? Olympia's not talking much. They issued statement that we printed in full, but they're not answering questions. I know one of the members of the city council wants some answers, so hopefully there'll be some pressure, accountability pressure built for them to sort of explain themselves what's going on. But yeah, there's been a whole lot of reaction. I've gotten, you know, calls, emails, texts, IMs, smoke signals, just everything you can.
Wow,
you can think
all that
of.
Stuff.
And people are deeply interested in what's going on.
Well, Bill Shea, I'm glad you guys are out there doing the Lord's work for us with Cranes Detroit. I would encourage all the listeners of Locked On Pistons to not only give Bill obviously a follow on Twitter, but get a subscription to Cranes Detroit. You know, Bill and I are newspaper guys from before, and you know, we're kind of living and dying on some of this stuff in some ways. And the more people out there reporting to some of this stuff, then we get the public discourse about it and proceed however we would want to as a kind of a city and sporting culture as it is. So, Bill, thanks for doing this, and thanks for taking your time tonight to talk to us here on Locked On Pistons.
Hey, my pleasure. Anytime.
So thanks again to Bill Shea, my buddy from the Port Huron Times Herald days. Back in the day before I moved to Missouri and the Virgin Islands, Chicago, he's moved on to Cranes Detroit Business, where he does a great job with that kind of sports and media beat, which obviously aligns right into my interests. I'm always reading Bill's stuff and always following his stuff on Twitter. He's a really smart guy and a really interesting follow on Twitter, and keeps his finger on the pulse of some things that I'm personally interested in. Now, just to get my kind of thoughts clear and out there, I don't think the public should ever finance stadiums for billionaires. I'm one of those people who says, sure, go ahead and do it, and it's all going to be on you. I don't quite understand. It's happened time after time again, and I know that the Ilitches have earned a certain amount of trust within the city. It goes both ways with them, though, right? I mean, they were one of the only groups, and we can say Mike Ilitch when he was alive, that it was basically him that was the head of the organization of the creation of Little Caesars Pizza, and then the Detroit Red Wings, and then the Detroit Tigers after that, and the Fox Theater. Mike Ilitch was spending money in the city of Detroit when nobody else was. So that is obviously a reason for us to be a little bit more sympathetic to his plight. He went out and spent huge amounts of money for the Red Wings when that was something that you could do in an uncapped league. He went on and did that in his late years with the Detroit Tigers. We all know this as Detroit sports fans. But on the other hand, like Bill mentioned in our interview, sat on a lot of that land in this now District Detroit area, and it was years and years of dirt parking lots that they've really kind of just paved over into parking lots. Some of these buildings that are sitting there behind the Fox Theater or sitting there north of the expressway are, you know, just the same as they ever was. And there's some under construction. That there's a good map that you should check out in that Cranes Detroit report about District Detroit. Check that out, that map that kind of puts a nice little picture on what was proposed, what's being constructed, and what has been constructed. It's pretty eye-opening if you take a look at it there. But thanks again to Bill Shea of Cranes Detroit for joining us here on the Locked On Pistons podcast. This is your host, Matt Shook, saying we'll talk to you guys tomorrow. We'll be back to basketball, I promise. And thanks for listening, everyone.